like to welcome to On Point Mr. Bob Morris. Bob is a former veteran of the Vietnam War and is now mostly retired, and he works as a mainstay volunteer in our annual Vets for Vets stand downs. So Bob, thank you for coming in. I appreciate this.
Well, thank you for having me on your program.
Let's get started with a little bit about your childhood, a little prep here. You grew up in
Great Falls, educated here, and went to high school here, and went into the Army in 1968.
Well, first of all, though, you from basically a small family, you were sports-minded. What else did you?
Pretty much the normal kid, sports, and run around with to kids in the neighborhood, and I was pretty much a leader.
Okay, pretty much a leader. That's going to come important here a little bit later on in your life, isn't it? Going to be
a
main factor here. But you also, you worked hard in your youth.
Yeah, I had several jobs even when I was a kid. Dad didn't believe in an allowance, but he did allow me to make money, and it was my money.
Yeah.
So I could do anything I wanted with it.
Okay, so you went to high school, you graduated. Not long after graduation, you got a notice from
a letter from the president.
Yes,
I got drafted.
Yes.
And
that was in what year?
That was 68.
Okay.
And we went through basic training at Fort Lewis, and then later on at Fort Ord, California.
That was where you had AIT?
That's where I got my training.
Okay, and what did you get trained in?
Several different things. Truck driving, radio operating, leadership, and then they shipped me off for a little bit of airborne training.
Oh, cool. That was not in Fort Ord. Where was that?
Fort Gordon, Georgia at the time. It was temporary jumping station, and basically, they just would shove a deuce and a half out of the back of a plane, and I went out after it because I had to drive it, and I had to be the first guy on the ground.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
It was a little scary, but it was fun.
You wanted to get to ground after the deuce and a half. You didn't want it landed on
you. I didn't want it landed on me. That's right.
Then, after you were in the States for a while, you got orders to Vietnam.
Yes, sir.
And when did you get to Vietnam, Bob?
That would have been 1969.
Okay.
And I went to different companies.
Did you arrive?
In Long Bend.
Long Bend, okay.
And just like most everybody else did. And I was assigned to a 5-ton tractor-trailer outfit and as a replacement.
And where was that?
That was in Long Bend.
But, I mean, where did you go? What unit did you join?
Oh, that was the 805th 26th Group, better known as the Orient Express.
Okay. That was what city, though?
That was Long Bend. And then we went south from there.
Okay.
We delivered a lot of stuff south to a place called Cogido and back and forth into different places. I spent a couple of months there, and then they had some problems with another trucking outfit, so I had to go as a replacement up there. Evidently, they had lost some people. And that was the 585th of the 48th Group.
And where was that?
That was at a place called Camp Evans. It was about 17 clicks from the DMZ.
Okay, clicks being?
Kilometers.
Kilometers.
Sorry about that.
Well, that's okay. I understood what you meant, but a lot of people wouldn't, unless they're Canadian. They use the term clicks. 17 kilometers from the DMZ.
Uh-huh.
The DMZ, that's
the demilitarized zone
between South and North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And 17 kilometers is what would you guess? About 10 miles, something
about
like that.
That, yes.
Yeah, so that's close. There were a lot of, these weren't Viet Cong up there. They were well-armed, highly trained NVA soldiers.
With artillery.
Yeah, and rockets and all sorts of stuff. They were well-armed and well-trained. So you're driving a 5-ton truck around.
Yeah, I was kind of like the duck in a shooting gallery.
And you did get shot at a lot.
Yes, sir, I did. It kind of disturbed me for a long time, but, after a while, you kind of get used to it. But then then they transferred me to the 666 transportation outfit, 48th Group, which we were called Devil's Disciples.
Okay.
And that was the 2.5 outfit.
Oh, some smaller truck.
A smaller truck, yes.
Not as much cargo space.
I got hurt.
Okay. You got...
I got hurt. Yeah, I hit a mine.
Okay.
And so
Well,
I took a ricochet, yeah, on my ankle. But I was not action very long with that. But...
It went through the door of the truck and hit something in the cab.
Door and tore off a piece of metal as it went through the door, and the metal lodged in my ankle.
Okay, so it was shrapnel, essentially.
It was shrapnel,
from the
yeah.
bullet round.
And oddly enough, it really didn't hurt until I stopped the truck.
you probably saw
10 miles later. 10 miles later, I got to my destination, and then it really started to hurt. But ironically, I didn't feel too much of anything until I got there. But when I got blown up in the truck, that was a miserable thing. That one sent me to
Let's back up a little here. You were in a deuce and a half, a 5-ton?
I was in when I got the shrapnel.
When you got hit hard.
Oh, that was when I got blown up, was in a deuce and a half.
It was in a deuce and a half.
Yeah.
Now, you had a man next to you.
Oh, yeah. That was a lieutenant that was killed instantly.
By this blast? Where was the mine? What part of the vehicle?
The mine hit the front right tire.
Okay.
And it just tore the whole truck apart on that side. And he was just killed instantly. And then my gunner, who was actually standing up in the back of this deuce and a half, was thrown from the truck, and he was, his back was broken. Mm-hmm. He was paralyzed.
Wow.
So, and he was a good guy, too.
And you were hit all along your right side.
My right side was covered with shrap metal, yes.
And you were knocked out.
I was knocked out for a while until they got me to weigh and got me into the hospital. And they pretty much had to fill in a lot of stuff that I didn't know about.
And still
don't know about.
And still taking metal out of you, did you say?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'll take a tweezer and pull out a little bit of piece out of my leg or my thigh or my shoulder or something like this.
Do you get through airport metal detectors okay?
No, as a matter of fact, I do not. I went to Salt Lake City, Utah just last year, and going through the metal detector, I set it off. And that has to do with the operation on my ankle as well, because there's steel pins and screws holding my ankle together. So I told the security guards that.
Sure.
They go over with you with a wand instead of having to walk through. So,
yeah. Now, when you were the truck driver there,
mm-hmm.
you also, you operated a radio. You kind of wore a lot of hats.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little more about that.
Well, you know, people get transferred out or they get wounded or they get sent home for one reason or another, and you have to cover their position. So, yeah, I did wear a lot of hats. I was on reconnaissance at times, bunker duty, radio operator, truck driver. At one point, I was even the NCOIC of the motor pool.
There's your leadership skills right there coming into the foreground.
Yes, I believe that was one of the things. But you sometimes you just have to look around and say, who's most qualified? And they say, okay, you do the job. And so you just do what they tell you to do.
Exactly. Okay, so after they got you, you were in the hospital for how long with the shrapnel wound?
4 weeks.
4 weeks. Then they reassigned you. You thought they might ship you home for a while, but they didn't.
Yeah, I thought I had the million-dollar wound, but they sent me right back to my unit and promoted me a grade.
So you made sergeant?
I made sergeant at that point, yes.
And they had you in a slightly different job when you went back.
I was still in a cast, so they really couldn't put me back in a truck to drive. So what they did is they took the NCOIC of the motor pool and put him in a truck. And so that's why I got his job for a while. And I did that for about a month.
And then you did patrols or?
Reconnaissance. Short-range reconnaissance, 3 miles out, 3 miles back. And this was night reconnaissance. And then my team and I, my five-man team, also we did bunker duty at night so that we could sleep during the day. And
Five guys went on the sweeps, yes, to the recon patrols?
We were a team. All right. We stayed together, and we did everything together. I mean, we went to chow, we went to services, we did everything together.
At one point, you had a probe on the perimeter when you were on bunker guard.
Yeah, they were testing the defenses that we had
the
one night.
NVA.
Yes, I believe it was. You couldn't tell the difference at times.
Sure.
They attacked our line, and we had to kill them. And
so you had flares?
Yeah, we originally down the road there, somebody popped a flare because we didn't have night vision back then. We didn't have
like the
starlight scopes, yes, and stuff. So somebody popped a flare, and the gentleman that was on top, his name was Ficklund, said, "Gook's in the wire." And that was our signal, "Gook's in the wire." And our radio man called back to station, and we had people coming up in readiness. So the fire, if you call it a firefight, didn't last very long, but I had to kill people. And that was my first experience of killing people. And it
and you actually knew you killed them. You saw
absolutely
them,
yes, right. Yeah. They were about 150 yards out, and I had an M60 machine gun. And I saw one of them get tore all to pieces. Mm-hmm. And that was tough. That was hard to take, even though it was the enemy.
It was your job, and had you not done them, they might have done your friends or you.
Yes.
And so that's just the nature of warfare. That doesn't stop it from haunting you later, though.
It haunted me for 40 years. That one experience has haunted me for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And but I got some help for that. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. we'll talk about that soon, too. Just for people who recently joined us, I'd like to reintroduce my guests, Mr. Bob Morris. Bob was a Vietnam vet, or is a Vietnam vet. He was there in 1969 and 70. And he recently attended a treatment program. But first, before we get into the treatment program, let's talk about some of the things you felt when you got home from Vietnam. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about in Vietnam?
That's fine.
Okay.
I really want to talk about how I felt when I came home and how I feel now, because it's so important. When I came home, people didn't want to talk to me about Vietnam, and I didn't want to talk to them.
But you, before that, before you even got home, you mm-hmm. had an experience in Portland.
Oh, yes. That I got off the bus in Portland in full uniform, feeling very good about making it back home. And this fella comes up to me, and he was obviously, we called them hippies at the time. And he called me everything but a decent human being, and then he spit on my uniform.
Wow.
That hurt more than getting blown up in that truck.
Rejection the thought that by my the people you're fighting for.
I felt at that point that my country had deserted me.
Well, I think
people
that was a
of
common
this country
feeling.
Deserted me. It wasn't true, but that's how I felt.
So you wouldn't talk about the war?
No. Absolutely
any of
not.
Your family members, did they ask you about it? And did they just
if
quit
they brought up the subject, I would either change the subject or leave the room. I didn't want to think about that place at all.
But you had classic symptoms of the warrior. You had the nightmares.
Absolutely, the shakes, the what they used to call the screaming sweats. But for people who don't know what that is, you have a bad nightmare and you wake up in absolute fear and terror, and you're covered in sweat, you're freezing to death, and you're scared. The worst feeling in the world. And it takes you a long time to wake up and say, no, that isn't real. And all kinds of different things that happen, the way firecrackers around the 4th of July, and he hit the deck. The way, for me, cold, rainy nights, when the power goes off, I would sit in the dark with my rifle, waiting for Charlie to come after us. Charlie was the enemy's name, and that was the time he'd come and hurt you.
Victor Charlie was the phonetic alphabet
Victor
word
Charlie,
for
exactly.
Viet Cong.
Yeah.
Victor Charlie.
But we just called him Charlie for short.
Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck. A lot of names we can't say on
that's
the air.
That's right. But there was I know in our unit, these guys would, they were almost like ghosts. The Viet Cong, that's all
yes.
I faced. But they would crawl through minefields and wire and turn the claymores back around on us.
Or crawl through tunnels.
How they did that, it was just almost mythical.
Yes.
And we respected them.
Oh, yes. If you didn't respect the enemy, they killed you.
Oh, and they could do a good job.
They could do
too.
A good job.
But, so, nightmares, the sweats, all the flashbacks. You tried to put it to bed with a bottle.
Yes, I crawled inside a whiskey bottle and stayed there for about a year. I didn't go any place without drinks. I didn't even go to my job without something to drink in my coffee. I always had a bottle under the front seat. I always had booze. That was the first thing I bought at the grocery store or the store I go to. And I just pulled the cork in behind me. And I was married at the time. And how she put up with it, I don't know, but she did.
How did you quit the alcohol? How did you get sober?
I used to go to a particular bar in town. And I remember going in one day because I just got paid and I was going to pay my bar bill. And there was a guy that I had been drinking with the day before because I worked at night. And he was in a corner, passed out. And in any bar you go to, there's always a mirror behind the bar where they store their whiskey bottles. And I was looking at that guy through that mirror, and I became him, and it scared me.
You think he had been there all night?
He had been there all night.
Oh,
I drank with him the day before.
Oh.
He had not left the bar in 24 hours. And anyway, it scared me, and I said, that's it. But, you know, I always thought to myself, I can cure myself of these things. I can take care of it. I'm tough. And then
but you didn't really trust anybody.
I didn't trust anybody, not even my relatives. The people who loved me the most and cared for me the most, I didn't trust them. I didn't even trust my wife at times. I came up with all kinds of things in my head. Why is she looking at me that way? Does she have a guy on the side? These things were really went
so
through
you,
my mind.
You were going inward then.
I was really inward. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I hated being in crowds. I couldn't go to a grocery store without looking around for somebody that was going to shoot me. I feared restaurants. I had to have my back to the wall at all times. I had to sit there and look at the people, and I'd eat fast so I could get out of there. You know, and I found that, you know, the first thing I looked for was exits.
Well,
and put my back to the wall.
A way out, exactly.
Yes.
So, you dealing with it the best you can. You did have help with the VA on matters of your wound. They were still helping you with some
right.
of the shrapnel and stuff like that. But you didn't know about any psychological.
Well, you have to remember, back in those days, they didn't even have a name for this stuff. They called it battle fatigue or shell shock.
Right.
Same
and
so
stuff.
They classified me as being of high anxiety, okay? And they gave me a lot of pills. And they did help for a while. But then I found I couldn't function with all this medication in me very well. So I started weaning myself off. It took me 7 years.
But you call yourself a drug addict, that you were,
I was.
You were on some
I was a legal
muscle
drug
relaxants. What other things were you on? What other types of medication?
Oh, my gosh. Valium, Percocet, Percodan,
pain
Ativan. And I can't remember all of them because I had a regular pill box full of pills that I was taking every day. And that went, that was about, altogether about 10 years.
Between the addiction phase and then the breaking the addiction.
That's correct.
And so, but you did it on your
own. I did it myself. Basically because they didn't know what they were dealing with. And I had to turn, I had to make a living, and I just couldn't function anymore. So I made a big mistake doing it, though. I just cold turkeyed it, and that was like falling off a cliff. I learned my lesson real quick. I got back on them and then just weaned myself off slowly.
But you were working at what then? You had
at,
jobs?
At that point, I had a recycling operation in Lincoln, Montana. Plus, I was working at the landfill as an attendant.
Okay.
Plus a sawmill.
So you were busy, but they weren't jobs where you had to work around other people, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. There was only three other guys at the sawmill, and we had machinery to operate. So I was pretty much alone, and then out the landfill, I was all alone. I was it. And then my recycling center, all the people I came in and recycled their stuff, and then they were gone. But you're correct. Good point. I did isolate myself.
I think that's the nature of the beast. You just, I don't know about you, but I felt like I had lost the ability to communicate. And I didn't really want to at that point. I just felt like I could go through this alone. I didn't need anybody. And I didn't trust them enough to let them close.
So exactly. You didn't want to let people in.
No, exactly.
You kept them at arm's length.
Yeah,
and sometimes a lot, lot farther away too.
A lot farther away. Okay, but you got rid of the addictions.
Mm-hmm.
You still are struggling with the nightmares. You're still struggling with a lot of the issues.
Yes, repetitive nightmares, the kind you don't want to have every night after night, and you almost get to the point where you don't want to go to sleep. In fact, you don't want to go to sleep. So you make up excuses, okay? I'm not tired, even though you can't hardly keep your eyes open. You find a place where nobody's going to see you, and that's where you catch a nap. All because right. You know you're going to come up screaming.
All right.
So
it's, I guess, it's just a horrible place to be in your mind. It's lonely. There just seems to be endless, like you're never going to get through it. But presto. You started these stand downs.
Yes.
And a bunch of us who had been through treatment started beating up on you.
I can't count how many people worked on me for about 2.5 years to actually make an appointment and get checked out on this thing. And I talked to a wonderful gal by the name of Christine King, Dr. Christine King. And
From the vet center
right here in Great Falls. And she was so kind that between you guys and
ragging
her and my sister and a bunch of other people, I finally went and got some real help at Fort Harrison.
And that would be with the, I don't know if they call it the EBPTU anymore, but it's Dudley Blake's treatment program. How long?
It's a 6-week program, but it isn't just one psychologist. It's a team of people that have one goal in mind, and that's to help you. And it's tough. It is a hard, tough thing. You have to face a lot of things that you don't want to face.
You've been avoiding them for a lot of years.
Well, for me, it was over 40 years. This is why I ask whoever's listening and has these things is to get to it as soon as you can, even if you don't think you have a problem. Because when I first came home, and you and I, Roger, can state this, you think, okay, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
I'm bulletproof.
Right. I made it home. I can do anything. And then these things start working on you, and you know it's so natural. It's almost like breathing that this stuff takes over your mind. So if anybody is listening, please take the time and just talk to some of these people. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. And that is not going to be a good feeling.
Now, you went into the program. There were how many people with you?
There were eight other guys at this program.
Eight other guys. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the things you do is you tell your story, your stories.
Yes.
Everybody has a different story. And you confront one another if you're out of line or if you're thinking incorrectly, negatively.
Well, yes, that's part of it. But sometimes it's better that somebody tells you that some things you don't understand.
Right.
And all of a sudden the light bulb goes on. Am I really doing that? Yes. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when you're in there, you got issues on survivor guilt. That's the huge one.
Absolutely.
Your friends who were bigger, brighter, faster, they were better soldiers, and they got killed.
Yes.
You didn't. Why not? So that's survivor guilt.
Yes.
But you also had the issues with the...
coming home.
Well, and the people that you killed is what I was thinking about.
Oh, yeah, that is a tough one for me to get over. It was hard. So...
But you're through with treatment. How long have you been out of treatment now?
A little over 2 years.
You're a different man.
Absolutely.
You are.
I got my life back.
I know you do.
Yeah. I can hold my wife and feel her love. I can talk to my relatives. I can talk to you. 40 years ago, I couldn't talk to anybody about this stuff.
I know.
Now I can talk to you. And anybody that's listening, there is a way out. There is some help here. And all you got to do is reach your hand out, and somebody's going to grab it.
So what do you feel are the most important lessons that you learned through treatment?
That it's a tough road. It's hard, but it's worth it. There wasn't one man that I met that didn't go away changed. And for the better, I think. But I want to put this into... is it's ongoing. You gotta stay with it.
You gotta work.
Even after the program. And the more you stay with it, the better you're gonna feel.
Does it do you any good to tell your story now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is part of treatment for me. Right. You betcha. And I think I know we're running out of time, but I thank you very, very much, Roger, for letting me tell this story. And I hope that it helps somebody out there that listens to this. Because this ain't smoke. No, this is just straight up talk.
It's guts. It's what it took to get all the way through this. And you can get better. If you're in the throes of it right now and you think there's no help, you're not right. You can get better. You just have to reach out and accept
and
the help.
And you're not alone.
You're not alone. Bob Morris, Vietnam vet, Great Falls lifetime resident. Thank you so much for being my friend, and thank you for coming in and sharing this time today.
Thanks for having me, Raj.